welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe the Altar Boy Jans.
And with us, as always, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Biscotti.
Damn it. This is just turning out like I was on mute. Yeah, we're on our fourth try here. Hi, everybody.
And
fuck.
So neither Mark or James are here tonight. Actually,
I'm here.
James is not here tonight. He had a screening he had to go to. I don't remember.
It hobnobbed with Hollywood's elite. The Meg 2.
Yeah, the Meg 2. That's right.
He's watching Jason Statham on jet ski with a samurai sword battling a giant fucking shark. So
it's a documentary, jealous. Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Megs are what are they called? Megalorians? Megalodon?
Megalodon.
Megalodon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Megan.
Megalorians.
Mandalorian, Megalorian. Yeah,
it's a shark Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll start us off this week in terms of watching stuff because I haven't watched hardly anything, but I do want to mention that What We Do in the Shadows this season is freaking hilarious. There's one episode that I think is one of the will go down as maybe the one of the funniest in the entire show. A couple weeks ago, the one with the gay pride parade that they were putting on was absolutely hysterically funny. From beginning to end. And I tell you, Laszlo wasn't my favorite when the show first came on, but he is hands down my favorite on this show. He is hysterically funny.
I'm a huge Nadja fan.
Oh, Nadja. Yeah. They're all great, but I like Nadja. I like the doll is hilarious.
The doll
Colin
is amazing.
Robinson. They're all great. They're all great.
You can tell Mark has never seen this show.
No, never. I've never seen this show.
No, we've only told him about it a million times. And
what,
the movie.
Hulu.
I know you did. I know.
And FX. I went as one of the characters for Halloween.
I don't have Hulu.
Do you have FX?
No.
Like the TV channel FX? No?
No.
Okay.
Do you have cable?
No.
Do you have television out there at the Cabin in the Woods?
Yes. I'll tell you later, but up at the cabin, I can watch Paramount Plus shows. So I was doing a little bit of that and Peacock. I did a little bit of that. I basically have HBO, Netflix, shit.
He's got Affleck.
I got Affleck. I have Netflix, I have HBO Max, I have Prime, Shudder, and
this is
maybe
riveting.
Some other
I
things.
Think when we're all done at the end of the episode, we're going to regret that we pressed record.
There's going to be a quiz at the end of this episode about which services, Mark
streaming services.
I've been doing nothing. Look, I'm up at the cabin, at my cabin right now in Wisconsin, and all I've been doing is laying out on a raft, just baking, and that's all I've been doing. So, yeah, this could be an interesting show.
Well, if you ever get a chance to watch something on Hulu, I strongly suggest you watch What We Do in the Shadows. And there is a movie for What We Do in the Shadows that is really funny too. So
I will admit I still have not seen that movie.
Oh, you haven't?
It's never on a streaming service, so.
Oh, they got a movie?
I thought that you had seen it. Otherwise, I would have included it in my vampire horror. If I'd known that you hadn't, I would have included it in that. But it's
maybe one of these days we can do a comedy horror redux.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And Mark's friend, Angelica, suggested to me that we do a ghost hauntings redux. So,
okay.
And I said, well, it's, you know, it's certainly one that we could do, because that was before when we did our hauntings and ghosts episode. It was before we did the format that we have now, where we pick five movies. I think that was just we went out. That was back when we were still just going out and watching a bunch of haunting movies, you know. So
yeah,
like every horror movie, every haunting movie we could get our hands on.
Right, yeah. And we weren't all watching the same ones, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So
that was dumb.
Yeah, anyway, it was riveting. It was dumb.
Yeah, that wasn't the greatest idea.
We're growing. We're maturing.
We are. It only took us 75 episodes, but we've got this down
now.
Yeah,
and I swear, 300-400 more episodes, we'll figure it all out.
Oh, yeah. By 220, I expect we'll have
easy.
It down.
Hands down. Yeah.
Yeah.
220?
Another
it's 2023.
Episode. A what?
Jesus
Christ. Oh, episode 2020. I got it.
Now, 220 is 220 for one thing, but whatever. The other show I wanted to
fuck
the other show that I wanted to mention was we started watching. It's more of a mystery than horror, but there are horror elements, I guess, based, you know, because there's serial killers involved and whatnot, murder. But there's a British mystery show that I think their third season just came out. That's how I came upon it. It just popped up because their third season came out. But we started watching it, and we've gotten through the first season, and we're into the second season. And it's called Happy Valley, and it's a British show, a kind of a cop mystery sort of thing. And it is intense. It is a really, really, really strong show, and it's on Amazon Prime. So I highly, highly recommend that show. There were moments in the first season when we were like, it was hard to breathe. It was so intense. So really, a really good show. I was shocked. When I first like looked at it and was reading about it, I was like, but I'm glad we started watching it. So highly recommend Happy Valley, and that again is on Amazon Prime. But I haven't watched, other than Oppenheimer is the only, I think, movie I've seen in the last couple of weeks. And I liked that. That was pretty good. But I haven't seen any non-theme related horror movies. So, Joe, it's got me wondering, have you?
I actually have. My daughter wanted to start watching a bunch of A24 horror films. So I jumped on board and was helping her out. We went through Hereditary, Midsummer, and just a couple nights ago we watched Tusk. And Tusk, she said, out of all three of those movies, she thinks it's the most disturbing thing she's ever seen, and was having difficulty sleeping after Tusk, which I just thought was hilarious.
She has no idea what she has no idea what she's into.
Yeah, oh, and like, God. If you think Tusk is bad, I got stuff I could show you. Put hair on your head.
Show her. Don't let her watch Speak No Evil.
I'm dying to make her watch.
Yeah.
Evil Dead Rise with me, but I kind of doubt that's going to happen.
Do you think that Mark has seen Speak No Evil by now yet, or is that one he still hasn't?
Probably
watched?
Not.
Yeah. No. Speak No Evil? No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Not ringing a bell. Never heard of it. No. Matt.
Yeah,
this is new to me, so. Matt.
So what's going on, like Joe? Like, is your daughter like just starting to get into horror? You know, because you're on the podcast. Like, what's happening here?
No, she was getting into A24 films. I believe she watched. Was it Beau's Afraid? And what's the actor's name? Matt, help me out. Played the Joker.
Joaquin Phoenix. Lady Bird or
Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin Phoenix. Beau is Afraid. It's an A24 film. And I was going to watch it with him. There he goes. I was going to watch it with them, but
what
they started kind of late at night.
What's going on with you tonight?
Nothing. It didn't click. Beau is Afraid. That's the one where he's like kind of like mentally afraid? Like, yeah, and he like
he's got mommy
it's
issues,
to be, like a really weird. Yeah, it's supposed to be really
weird.
Where
did Lady Bird come
through.
From?
That it's an A24 film. It's an A24 film, Lady Bird.
So not horror. Anyway,
well,
I found out it's like 3 hours long, so, and I had to work the next morning, so I didn't bother, but that kind of got them all down the trail of, you know, oh, you should watch all the A24 films. So, and I think
The Witch.
The Witch would be another great one for her to watch. I did sort of like go through a list of A24 films, or at least just the horror ones, but yeah. So she's got plenty to watch. And then, of course, after that, I think my wife wanted an introductory course on who the hell's this Wes Anderson guy. So I have to, yeah.
Fun.
She's never seen a Wes Anderson film.
Fun.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'll start with, what is it, Atomic City? Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. No, don't start. Don't Most start recently? With that.
No, really?
No, don't start with that. No. It's that one is. I think that's a better one to watch after you've already acquired a taste for him. I feel like
the
best one to start. Well, the first one was Bottle Rocket, and I don't think that's a good one to start either.
No.
I think
what's the first
Rushmore,
one we should start her off with?
Rushmore.
Okay.
Rushmore. For sure.
Royal Tenenbaums. Mm-hmm. Life Aquatic. Those are good introducing you to Wes Anderson movies. The hotel one, the Grand Budapest Hotel. That's a good one,
right?
Too,
I would hold off on Mr. Fantastic Fox for a while, because that's what
I was gonna say. What's the camping one? With Bruce Willis.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom.
That's a great one. Yeah.
That's one that I've seen, and with, I haven't seen half of probably what you guys have already mentioned either, but Moonrise Kingdom is one of the ones that I've seen that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Rushmore is the most like accessible, almost mainstream, and less, and it's not as, I mean, there's definitely his aesthetic style in it, but not quite as strong as movies later were. But,
yeah, it has a wonderful soundtrack as well.
Oh God, yeah, great soundtrack. Royal Tenenbaum's got a great soundtrack too. But I do.
Yeah,
but see, that's one of the ones I haven't seen yet. So,
really? You haven't seen that one? Oh, that's one of my favorites.
I think I've only seen maybe 4 Wes Anderson films. So,
I definitely anyway, would go on a marathon with him. I would go maybe once a week or
doses.
Every other week. Yeah, yeah.
We'll probably watch Lady Bird in between.
Unless she gets crazy. After the first one you show her, if she goes crazy, then yeah, do a marathon.
Yeah, that's true. So speaking of going crazy, are we... Oh, wait, Mark, what did you
is
watch
that, it?
That wasn't... Yeah, I'm done. Yeah. I watched Barbie.
Yeah, we haven't... How was that?
It wasn't for me, but it was very well done. It was extremely well cast. It was very well written. I'm not the audience for it. I appreciate it. It was decent.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, storm out and huff. I liked it, kind of. I've seen worse. Let's just go with that. It wasn't bad.
All right.
How's that for...
Yeah. Hey, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I definitely want to check it out.
Yeah. Mark, what did you watch?
So, like I said, I'm up at the cabin and I don't have Paramount Plus. And since we have Paramount Plus up at the cabin, I decided to watch the 2020 The Stand. Have you guys watched that?
Yeah. No.
It's okay. It's not riveting. It's, if you read the book and it goes, back and forth. And I don't know. I think I like the TV version better from back in the day. There's some decent, acting in it. It's weird seeing Amber Heard in this series, just knowing what happened and who she is as a person now. So it's weird seeing her acting, but she's not bad in it. James Marsden's great, very charismatic. It's just not scary, but I don't know if The Stand really was scary. It's just a different kind of novel that Stephen King did and Peter Straub. But it's not bad. I'm on episode 5, so I've gone 5 hours into it. It's not bad. It's okay. You know, I know the story, know the characters, so I'm just watching it. So it's fine. I watched since we were doing Joe's, you know, pick, something popped up on Netflix, and it was called The Pale Blue Eye, 2022, starring Christian Bale and Harry Mulling. It's on Netflix, and it's about a retired detective recruits an acute West Point cadet named Edgar Allan Poe to help solve a grisly and horrific murder at a U.S. military base back in the day in the 1800s, like late 1800s. And it has some satanic rituals in it. Fabulous acting, especially Henry Mulling, who plays Edgar Allan Poe. I really actually enjoyed it. It's a Jason horror. It's got some satanic rituals, but I wouldn't consider it a horror, but I definitely would recommend it. I think the acting's absolutely phenomenal with it. Did you guys watch the new Exorcist trailer?
Yes.
From yes. Blumhouse? What do yeah. you guys think?
Yeah. Looked okay. I mean, it's hard to judge from a trailer, but yeah.
I was just about to say, I think I'm trying not to judge it off the trailer because I wasn't thrilled with the trailer.
Right.
But neither was I. I'm going to try to reserve judgment for later. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so obviously it's a sequel. I don't know. I don't know. After watching the trailer, I'm a little nervous, but hopefully, you know, there's going to be some decent scares in it.
It's okay, man. But, together we'll get through this.
Yeah, we will. Also, just an announcement. Never Hike Alone has finished principal photography. They just released it today. And they will be revealing this film on time on October 13th, Friday the 13th this year. So that's great news for us. And fantastic. Vincent's, you know, just killing it, you know, out there. And so that's really exciting that it's really going to happen on October 13th, Friday 13th of this
year. Yeah. Wonderful.
So, hell yeah. 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 Fantastic. Yeah, would you watch, Matt?
I already said mine.
What We Do in the Shadows. Oh, yeah, you did. You hadn't heard of it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That whole conversation.
See I've how much you pays in attention the sun to your way too long.
I don't know what's going on with me.
Mark.
Oh, yeah. Marky Mark. I guess that.
We better just get into it.
Brings Here us we go. To our pick of the week, which is the pick of Joe, who some might call our most lethal weapon. Joe. Tell us about your picks.
I'm still getting comfortable with this whole lethal weapon thing. I like that. I'm a lethal.
Yeah,
weapon. I like that.
That's Are you Murtaugh or Riggs? I'm Riggs.
It's amazing what I can come up with off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but you're not.
Either
nuts.
Way, I'm getting too old for this shit. Yeah.
No.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so we're gonna start this was cult classics. I was inspired by one of Matt's earlier picks, and I wanted to get into religious cult movies because there's an abundance of them, and there's something for every member of the family to enjoy with these. So we're gonna start off with a classic, Roman Polanski's 1968 Rosemary's Baby. And for those of you that haven't seen it, I say shame on you. But as long as you're still listening, it is about a young couple trying for a baby that moves into an aging, ornate apartment building up in Central Park West, where they find themselves surrounded by very, very peculiar neighbors. And I gotta say, one of my all-time favorites, I accidentally sort of not really accidentally. I ended up buying it because it was like $7 to buy this movie or $4 to rent it. So it just made sense. Anyway, the characters in this film are just spectacular. I'm a huge fan of Ruthie Gordon, who plays one of the neighbors, and she's just crazy as all get out. If I lived next door to her, I'd probably hang myself. But for the movie's sake, she's fantastic. Her and her husband, though, don't seem to be all that broken up. There's a scene where there's a younger woman that's staying with them, and she commits suicide, jumps out of the building while they're out running their errands or whatnot. They come trouncing back in to see what's all going on. And just the way these people dress is just phenomenal. But the cops just told them that this woman that's been spending all this time living with them has pretty much just died right in front of them all over, I think, Fifth Avenue. But they didn't seem all that broken up about it. I would have expected a much bigger reaction out of them. I will say that the setting is just gorgeous. These apartments that these people were buying are just spectacular. I'm really curious to know what something like that would go for in New York nowadays. There's a really, I think it's kind of uncomfortable or at least rude scene where Mia Farrow, who once she's pregnant, had gotten a really short haircut, and the husband like pulls no punches about how terrible it is. I will agree, it's a terrible haircut, but for God's sakes, man, that's your wife. So, you know, he's back on those punches. John Cassavetes, I don't know what you guys thought, but the guy that plays the husband reminds me 100% of Roy Scheider. Like, you could have taken Roy Scheider out of Jaws and plopped him into this movie, and you wouldn't have skipped a beat. I do have a question. Why is it that almost all satanic cults have rituals that where they all have to be naked for it? You know, these aren't like the most well-physiqued individuals, but there are lots and lots of nudity in Satanism that I'm learning. So, but anyway, there, you know, this is one of my favorite cult classics simply because there's such a happy ending at the end. Everybody gets what they wanted. So what did you guys have to think? Matt, what did you think about this cult classic?
Well, obviously it's a masterpiece. Polanski's, you know, one of his masterpieces. The nudity thing, though, I think is a direct response to the sort of uptight prudishness of Christianity and most, especially Christianity. And so I think it's a response to that. It's a showing that there isn't, Adam and Eve became ashamed of their nudity, and these satanic cults are not ashamed of their nudity. They are happy to be naked, happy with the human form. So I think that's why there's so much nudity in these kinds of satanic cults. And I don't know if the real ones, you know, I don't think there are that many real ones. Most of the Church of Satan that you hear about now, they're just people who are pretty much just atheists, but they kind of created Church of Satan as a counter to Christianity and trying to keep government from getting too involved in the church. Because if you allow on public property, let's say a cross, well, then the Church of Satan's going to say, okay, well, we want this devil on public property. And the whole point is that they won't allow any religion on public property. You know what I mean? So it's more of a political statement than an actual religion. And most of these big movers and shakers in Satanism. But of course, you know, that wouldn't be a fun horror movie if that's what you made it about. I love the commercial where the guy says, "You really should try the swinging world of Yamaha." Correct me. I don't know if you guys noticed that or not.
Yeah.
And yes, of course, Ruth Gordon is fantastic. I can kind of see Roy Scheider in the husband. He's a bit of a dick though. And so, yeah. You know, Michelle kept commenting on that too when we were watching it. And I was like, well, I couldn't say it at the time because she'd never really seen it, but it makes sense because he also has to be the kind of guy who would be willing to make a deal like this. you know? And so the fact that he does make off the cuff statements like that, and he's kind of just in his own world and more obsessed with his career, that makes sense. He's kind of a narcissist. But the shots in this, I loved the camera movement. I loved the look of the apartment. It's just a beautifully shot film, which is not, you know, not surprising. Polanski knows his stuff. In turn, he can shoot a movie, obviously. But Ruth Gordon and her husband, I thought, were great. I thought, you know, if there was a satanic cult like this, it would probably very much be filled with people like this. You know, it seemed like it didn't seem unbelievable to me. You know, it didn't seem like they were overtly evil people. They were just Satanists, you know, and they didn't have like this cool, crazy apartment. It was just a normal, I mean, it was a rich apartment, obviously, but it wasn't, you know, there was no sense of trying to make them into this kind of a glamorous thing. You know, yeah, they were all naked, but they weren't all beautiful. They were just normal people, normal everyday people. Your doctor, you know, the guy who delivers mail, other people. They were just normal everyday people who were a part of this sect or coven, or I don't know what they would call themselves, I guess. But and I thought the whole dream sequence, not really dream sequence, but it seemed like it was a dream sequence, where she was you know, basically being raped by Satan. I thought that was very well done. I thought it was creepy and just weird as hell. And of course, then the husband's his kind of gaslighting of her, you know, it reminded me of the movie Gaslight, if you've ever seen that. It reminded me of that, the way he was talking to her. But of course, there were more people involved. So great movie, classic masterpiece. I've seen this several times over the years, and I always enjoy it. Mark, what did you think of this?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's a classic, plain and simple. Obviously, all the listeners know this, pretty much all the listeners. I mean, this movie is about manipulation and gaslighting. That's what I have in my notes. Of course, Ruth Gordon, who plays Minnie, the old neighbor, is an absolute joy to watch. The close-up of her eating the cake and it was a close-up of her face and just watching her absorb and react to the conversation. And she's just like moving around her face and just drinking the wine and eating the cake. Mm-hmm. God, it's like Roman Polanski knew just to keep that scene on her because she's so brilliant at it. It was comedic and fascinating to watch. The satanic rape scene was brilliantly done. It was creepy. The fact that they show exactly what was happening through bizarre images, but it was happening in real life, where she's going, you know, something's wrong. You know, it's like, what's happening? I have a question with this, though. It's like, was the devil raping Rosemary, or was it her husband?
I think it was the devil.
Because
what comes out,
right? Well, they never showed the baby, They did.
They showed the baby's eyes, and they were like cat's eyes, and there was like a red face. Yeah, in the crib when she walks into the room.
When she walked into the room with all the people, they showed it.
Yeah.
How did I not see that?
I don't know. It was just a flash of his eyes, but yeah.
Okay. The flash of the eyes, but yeah, I kind of took it as just like, you know, the devil's eyes, but not like it was the baby's eyes, I guess.
No, it was a baby. Yeah.
Dang. I for some reason it didn't compute. Actually, this is probably like the third time I've seen this film, and it just never really computed with me. It just never registered. That's weird. And I do remember, say, look at the hands, look at the feet, you know, So I guess it was the devil. For some reason, I always thought it was the husband. But speaking of the husband, I mean, this guy is a complete asshole. And talking about manipulation and gaslighting and like a narcissist and like what these people do to other human beings, when he admits to Rosemary, he's going, yeah, you know, like I had sex with you, we had to do it. So I just basically raped you. And, you know, she just basically said, oh, okay, well, you know, we could have waited. I mean, it's obvious, like, she's been dealing with this kind of manipulation and narcissist abuse for a long time. And so she's been a victim of this. And that's just fascinating just to watch on its own. But yeah, it's a great film. Charles Gordon never realized that the doctor was Charles Gordon all the way, you know, until the third time. And I saw it on there. It just didn't register that it was Charles Gordon. But yeah, just absolutely fantastic film. It's Ruth Gordon, treasure, national treasure. Just loved it.
So that brings us to our next film of these cult classics. And I want to go to Ty West's first of two films that we're going to be discussing, 2013's The Sacrament. So, Mark, why don't you put your best foot forward and tell us what you thought about it?
Oh, we're going in with The Sacrament. Yeah, that's perfect.
That was one of the movies we watched.
Yeah, don't drink that Kool-Aid. Look, it's a well-made found footage film, but lacks the question of why Father allowed the vice reporters into the facility. And that's what really bugged the shit out of me. His religious, you know, cult, you know, that happened there, he was fine. He was fine. He had, you know, the guards at, you know, the gate. With the machine guns, why did he let, you know, the reporters in? He didn't have to do that. And so that's what made me absolutely insane when the end of the film happened. He's going, it's our time, it's our time. And that's what drove me fine, you know, like, you know, crazy. Look, it's always fun how directors try a different take on found footage. I do enjoy found footage. It's the same as Matt. It's just this one point. It's like, why did he let the reporters in? Because,
you know, this is basically exactly what happened in real life, though, right?
Well, yeah. I drink the Kool-Aid. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know the story. Well, not the story. I just knew that there was some cult, you know, religious, you know, fanatic. They all drank the Kool-Aid. They all died in there.
James Jones.
Yep.
James Jones.
They all died in the bed, right? In their beds.
No, that was
you're thinking
Heaven's Gate.
Yeah. With the tracksuits and the Nikes. That's Heaven's Gate.
This was Jim Jones down in Guyana or someplace like that. And he had, it was basically this exact same thing, same kind of setup. And he kind of had become a god to these people, and he had guards just like that. And a delegation, it wasn't Vice. It was I believe some reporters and a delegation of a senator maybe, and some politicians came down to inspect the place. And then when they were leaving, the guards fired on them and killed all of those guys. And then Jim Jones made everybody poison themselves. So it's basically exactly what happened, except for it was politicians and I think a couple reporters came down.
Really? Okay. Well, I didn't know that. But in the film, I mean, it's like, why did they let the reporters in though? Like, why did he let them in? You know,
it was for the same reason. I think they originally were trying to get better publicity because people were wondering what was going on. They thought it was some crazy cult. And I think originally he thought he was going to be able to manipulate the reporters into doing a puff piece on them that, hey, see, everything's fine.
And honestly, the reporters weren't the issue, in my opinion. I mean, everything with the reporters and the father went off without a hitch.
Yeah.
The father allowed it because he wanted to have his side of the story published. And that all was fine. Had whatever happened the next day not happened, I can only assume that everything would have been fine. Those Vice guys, the reporters, would have went back stateside and said, here's the footage that we have and here's what we experienced.
So basically, the catalyst was the members in the church, you know, wanted to leave and they made a big ruckus. And then basically, you know, he couldn't let the reporters leave. I guess that's what it was. But obviously the father knew like people didn't want to still stay there. And so, like, why let the reporters in? He already had them trapped. I guess that's what I'm saying right there. But regardless, it is a very good found footage. I love the brother and sister office scene where she injects him with cyanide or whatever she does. Joe, are you in your car?
No.
Oh, okay.
There's some beeping going on. Someplace.
The computer issues. I keep.
But
just be thrilled I can record.
Yeah, absolutely. But I did love that scene from the beginning to start. I don't want to, you know, the brother saying, I don't want to die. What are you doing to me? That was a great scene. She lights herself on fire. That was phenomenal. It's not a bad found footage film. I guess I had a little bit of a hard time with why they would just let him in. He already knew, like, he had, like, some things going on inside the church and they wanted to leave. Why, you know, throw gasoline on a fire, basically? That was the only problem I had with it. Otherwise, the father reminded me of John Goodman. I don't know if you guys even like recognize that, but man, he reminded me of John Goodman. And that being said, I really enjoyed his performance. I thought it was great because he was mesmerizing when he talked and with his slow drawl and whatnot. It was kind of hypnotizing. But it's a great idea that he had. It's just too bad. He was corrupted. But yeah, enjoyable film.
It's funny you say that because one of my notes is that the father is very persuasive and he actually makes a very good argument.
Absolutely.
For Ian Parrish. But Matt, what did you think about this film?
I thought it was good. Yeah, I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty good. I liked the there wasn't any, you know, a lot of times found footage, there's always somebody kind of annoying in it, you know, and there was no annoying characters in this one.
Nope.
I thought it was, you know, definitely it was very close to what happened in real life in many ways. So it's funny. Mark's problem with it is basically something that really happened. And it is a good question, but it's a question you'd have to ask Jim Jones. Why would he? In his case, it actually is a little easier understood as in his case, there was a U.S. senator coming down there to see if illegal stuff was happening and the reporters came with him. So that might have made it a little easier for you, I guess.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you have a senator going down there instead of just like a vice, you know, reporters go in there. If it's just vice reporters, like fuck off. Like, you're not coming in. The only person invited was her, you know, her brother.
Yeah. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he thought he could sweet talk the reporters into giving, you know, doing maybe, you know, he was so used to persuading everyone and everybody just doing what he said. Maybe that's part of the problem. Is that he thought he'd be able to do the same with them, and he found that he couldn't.
No, I disagree with that because, like, all the people there were drug addicts and homeless and whatnot.
No, they weren't. No.
Well, yeah. Well, no, a lot of them were.
A lot of people were wealthy in the States, and they gave all their money to him to have this place. Yeah. So,
they were all like emotionally, you know, like disturbed or like having like real issues in life. And he was like feeding off their fears and whatnot. And that's what brought him over there. But there was a lot of alcoholics, a lot of drug addicts. A lot of people just dealing with that kind of stuff, not reporters. But not all
of them were. A lot of them were just true believers that he had hoodwinked.
Yeah, lost souls looking for a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of these people weren't, you know, like the sister, for one thing, she came from a wealthy family. She was educated.
But she was an alcoholic.
She was a drug. She was an alcoholic or a drug addict, and then she found her way.
I mean, that's kind of.
You're right, Matt. You're right. You had religious people. Yeah, you had two gentlemen, from the hood, you know, like dealing with, you know, like I don't want to, you know, deal with drugs and, you know, get shot and all that, and they went, to there. So yeah, we're both right.
But. Anyway, I thought the main guy was really good. I thought the sister was good. I think the guards, there was a good sense of danger in it, I thought. I know Joe liked the music. I always find it a little distracting when there's music in a found footage movie, though. What did they do later? Put music to it? Like, you know, yeah. And then I don't care for that. I like the silence that's often involved in a found footage. And so when I hear them add music to it, I find that distracting. But yeah, I thought it was, you know, it's odd that I didn't even realize Ty West made a found footage movie, actually. I didn't know anything about this movie, actually.
Neither did I.
I really hadn't thought of anything about him before other than, you know, House of the Devil and The Innkeepers, which is, I love that movie. If we do ever do a Hauntings Redux, I would add that one in there too, because I love that movie. But and of course X and all these, but it was probably my least favorite of this batch, I would say, but that doesn't mean I didn't like it. It's just if I had to choose, it would probably be at the bottom of the list on this batch, I think.
Okay, so that just means it's all uphill from here. So.
It's all uphill from here. No, right. Actually, yeah, it's close with another one, but yeah. But
if this is the bottom, then yeah, that's fine.
No, if this is the bottom, it's a good batch I do recommend this. Yeah.
By the way, the gentleman that we keep referring to as the father, the actor's name is Gene Jones.
Yeah.
And for those of you that may be scratching your head going, where have I seen this guy before? He was the shopkeeper or gas station attendant in No Country for Old Men that almost lost his life due to a coin flip.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit. Brando. That was him.
That's him. That's Gene Jones. I agree. Is captivating. Amazing. In this particular role.
Amazing.
They picked a wonderful actor and they wrote that part very well to get across the reason why, like, those people were there. Mm-hmm. They listened to him talk long enough with the salvation that he's promising. Sure, go ahead. I've got nothing else to live for. Just take my money and let me go. So like I said, Eden Parish did seem pretty legit. They had hospitals. They had daycare. They had laundry. They had basketball. You know, you build your own community. Mm-hmm. And it's away from all the other nonsense of the world. It actually does not sound that bad.
No.
And this is the part that I think Mark was touching on that I don't get. So at the beginning, these news reporters show up and everybody's fine. They're all talking to them. They're being well-behaved. And then they have that meeting or that prayer service that night that continues into the wee hours of the next morning. But then when the guys wake up, you know, what everybody, when the reporters went to bed, everything was fine. Then a couple hours go by and there's the promise of this helicopter there. And that's when all hell breaks loose. And I'm just curious, why then? What happened in the couple of hours that they were asleep?
Well, I think it's because they knew that when the visitors were going to leave, when Vice, you know, was going to leave, and they knew, and it was like this, like, kind of moment where it's like, it's now or never. It's now or never. And that's why they were there. Yeah, I mean, they had the suitcases there, you know. And
yeah, which is the other thing I don't understand. Why would you even bother packing a suitcase if it's that horrific and you're so desperate to get back stateside? Why, you know, I would think you'd be hiding in the bushes outside of where that helicopter is going to land, and you run and jump and just hang on to that thing under the helicopter for dear life, you know, whatever you can do to get off that island. But
because that's happened.
I also thought it was odd that there's so many people that did not want to be there. Mm-hmm. And when they were told, no, they had to stay, they willingly, well, for the most part, willingly drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Some of them needed, you know, a muzzle pointed to the back of their head. So others didn't. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I do want to point out the obvious, just in case any of our other six listeners are saying, yes, Joe willingly picked a found footage film. They're not all terrible. But for reason that Matt hates it is the same reason that I like it. I'm like, all right, at least I got some music to listen to. That sets the mood.
Well, that's because, well, here's the thing. I mean, it was a Vice, you know, I mean, they recovered, you know, the recording and all that. And of course, Vice, you know, of course, they're going to put music to elevate, you know, your emotions. And that's what media does. And so that's why that music's in there. So I had no problem with the music because it was recovered. And it was like a media. So, yeah, I mean, get those views. That's why I didn't have a problem with the music. But there is one scene in this film where, you know, the father is telling them to drink the Kool-Aid, and he just repeatedly going, take it, take it, take it. That was just, oh my gosh. And then they're feeding the small babies with, you know, little shots, you know, putting it in their mouths. And, you know, and you see, you know, children taking it. It's like, oh my God, it was just, it was horrific to watch. It's not a bad found footage film. It's just that one part. But other than that, I loved it. Great pick.
Well, speaking of, unless you guys have something else to say, speaking of movies that have no music in the background, we're going to go on to Red State by Kevin Smith from 2011. Set in Middle America, a group of teens receive an online invitation for sex, though they soon encounter fundamentalists with a much more sinister agenda. Matt, what did you think of Kevin Smith's Red State? And you're muted, by the way.
I didn't care for the third act so much. I kind of brought it down for me. I didn't like the ending, and I didn't really care for the third act too much. But I thought everything in the first half especially was set up quite well. I do have some notes on this. The guy who hid next to his body, that, you know, this kind of pretty good idea. He laid next to him and acted like he was dead too. I would have grabbed a gun to begin with though, and then just shot everybody when they came in that room. But, then I guess there wouldn't have been a movie.
No.
The gunfight.
He didn't last long.
Yeah. Now there were a few things that I had problems with that I think may have been a product of the budget. there was a gunfight happening, and John Goodman is like petting horses, and then the other guy comes up and they have this whole conversation while the gunfight's happening. I would have thought that that conversation should have happened like behind a car, maybe he's crouched down, but he's like standing over by the horses petting them. That seemed like way out of place, and you still hear gunfire in the background. Might have been the budget, though. Maybe they just didn't have enough money. They just had to do that someplace where there wasn't all this action happening and actors. I didn't understand the change in the daughter, because I would have liked to have seen some reluctance on her part. But at the very beginning, they've got this guy who strapped up to a cross and they kill him. And she's as happy to take the kids out of the room, you know, to keep them away from having to see it. But she doesn't seem at all. There's no negative rebellious side to her at all that it makes her question anything that her dad's doing. Grandfather. And then she kind of goes through this change. Now, if it was a self-serving change, it was muddy to me. I would have liked to have seen if she really did go through a change where she was trying to get out of there and not, because she was running herself out and then was going to try to get the kids out too. But that wasn't a cult-like activity. That was her just trying to get out of there and save the kids. But it wasn't like, well, we're all going to die. You know, most of those hardcore cult people would be like that. And if she wasn't like that, then I would have liked to have seen something from her earlier that showed that she had some questions about this lifestyle. And I thought I do think the final act really fell flat for me. And I read up on why it was the way it was. And he had a much bigger plan involved. He just didn't have the budget for it. It was going to be, there was actually going to be the four horsemen of the apocalypse riding down, and all of the cult members' heads were supposed to explode in that last scene. Once the trumpets go off and everything, they're supposed to have this standoff with the cops. And when the trumpets go off, all the cult members' heads were going to explode. And then this guy comes down from riding a horse from the sky and cuts, slices somebody's heads off. And then they look up and they see the four horsemen of the apocalypse riding through the sky. And I don't know. I mean, just saying that ending, I don't know if it was a better ending, because it does sound kind of goofy, but I didn't care for the way it ended. So I really, really, really liked everything in the first third to the first half, with when it was the kids trying to get out of there and some of the twists and turns that happened in that part. But as the movie wore on, I liked the choices less. And by the end, I really didn't care for the ending. But having said that, that's why I said it's close to what was the previous movie we just talked about? Sacrament. Yeah, it's close in that, you know, I think I liked Red State a little bit better than the Sacrament, though. So,
Mark, what'd you think of this?
This is Kevin Smith's best film that he's ever directed, in my opinion. His writing is on point, and when Kevin Smith hires a cast of actors that is talented, like Michael Parks and John Goodman, it just elevates all the way. In my opinion, this is Kevin Smith's best directed film. It would be Red State. No, it would be. God dang it! It would be Clerks, Dogma, and then Red State. Look, this is what happens when corrupt minds worships the Bible and misunderstands the scripture and text. When this happens, you're going to get events like Waco in Texas. It becomes horrific and the exact opposite of what the Bible teaches. Now, with that being said, it's a rocking good time watching this film. Just the dialogue that Kevin Smith does, and with John Goodman waking up in bed and he's talking to his wife and with the breakfast, and just camera focuses on John Goodman when he's just being fed breakfast. It's just so fun to watch. It's so fun to watch. Michael Parks is phenomenal in this film. It's just great to watch. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm glad if, you know, like after what Matt said, like what Kevin Smith's like original like ending was going to be, but he couldn't do it with the budget. Thank God that ending didn't happen, because I love the third act to this film. I think it's great. I think it actually helped out the film, especially at the end when Michael Parks in prison. And he's just going through passages through the Bible, and you have a cellmate like on the other side of the wall going, "Shut the fuck up!" It's like, "Yeah, shut the fuck up." It's a great film. Kevin Pollak getting shot in the eye. It's just, you know, you have a great actor there, and he's gone in 3 minutes, and there's that awkward pause. I mean, Kevin Smith is like on his A game with this film, and I wish there was more films that Kevin Smith would do where he's on this kind of A game. Because afterwards, you know, you get Jay and Silent Bob Strike Again or Again or something like that. I watched that film. I couldn't even get through 15 minutes of it. He needs to stay on this kind of films. He needs to stay on Tusk. He needs to stay on Red State. Just, it's so weird. It doesn't even feel like a Kevin Smith film when, you know, you're watching Red State. It's that good. And there is just so many times when you watch a Kevin Smith film and you're just going, man, it's so amateur. It's very amateur. Red State is not. It's not. And yeah, phenomenal film.
All right. I want to touch on some of the cast like you did. Just a quick rundown. Michael Parks as Evan Cooper is, in my opinion, he's hands down, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I found out that he used to actually be a singer. He sang with Johnny Cash way back in the day when he used to do hymns and whatnot, which Kevin Smith wasn't even aware of when he cast him for this until they got to the parts where they were bringing up him playing piano and singing hymns. And the music that he sings is literally the only music in this film. John Goodman is an absolute badass from the minute he wakes up and lights a cigarette out of bed. And I love the line where he shakes the bed a little bit, tells his wife, "If you love me, you would make me coffee." I love that. And the only interaction that John Goodman has with another character that I love even more is with the Sheriff Winan, played by Stephen Root. The sheriff accidentally shoots that kid, or actually, I don't even know if it would be accidentally.
It was an accident.
Just how he treats him after that, like just a little kid. It's just, I absolutely loved it. You've got cameos. Anna Gunn, who you would remember as Skyler from Breaking Bad, has a brief cameo as the mother. Like you said, Kevin Pollak. I don't even know why Kevin Pollak is in this film. He didn't lend much. Like, anybody could have taken over that spot, but he's in it, and it's great, and it lasted 3 minutes.
The fact that it's Kevin Pollak, and you know it's Kevin Pollak.
What the hell is he doing in a Kevin Smith film?
And then he's just gone like that. It's just perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And it's still, knowing that scene was coming up, and when Kevin Pollak gets shot in the eye, it still gave me a jolt. I jumped.
Oh, yeah. I want to also, I would be remiss if I missed out Melissa Leo, who played Sarah, or the mom, you know, the woman that lured the kids into the trailer to have sex. She was spot on. She was a religious nutbag, 100%, totally believable. And I can't picture her in any other role.
Yeah.
I also wanted to point, I just thought this was interesting. This movie was shot in sequence over a 25-day period on a digital red camera. And wow. It was the digital aspect allowed him to shoot, like, the minute they finished principal photography, I think it was like the next day he already started having rough cuts of the film ready to show people.
Wow.
So now I think he
was editing it as they were filming.
Yeah. I agree that the ending is odd for any movie. However, Matt, like you said, the original ending that he wanted versus the ending that we got, I prefer the ending that we got.
Yeah.
I think what he would have done would have been so convoluted and hard to actually bring to fruition. I kind of got a big giggle out of the first time I saw this with the ending with the horns, the trumpets. I kind of liked it. That part seemed like Kevin Smith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that was his answer to this problem. And the only other problem I had with the characters that were kind of believable for the most part was that one, I think it was Travis, when he gets his hands on that Armalite AR-15 and he's running through the church to escape. My wife watched this movie with me last night too, and she said it out loud as I was thinking it. Why are you running? You've got an automatic assault rifle. Stop, turn around. Those guys that are unarmed that are running at you, you shoot them.
No.
Then you don't have to run.
No.
I mean, granted, he still would have probably died because he got killed by the sheriff.
No way.
But
if you're running and you're in that situation and you're a teenager and whatnot, and guaranteed, like, if I had it, like, maybe I would turn. I don't know. But in that situation, I mean, I think it's more realistic that he just keeps running, you know,
I didn't think that was realistic at all. And
why?
I agree with you, Joe. I didn't think that was realistic at all, especially because you ran through the
church.
He didn't turn around and run back down the hallway that he came from. He just ran right through them.
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
No, that's just showing that he's in absolute fear. That's more realistic than just turning around like John McClane in Die Hard and just like firing away. We already saw that with Greg from Succession. I mean,
You think it's realistic to, instead of running back the way you came where there is no one, to run through a congregation of people who might have guns? And you've got a gun yourself and you don't use it. That's realistic?
Yeah, man. I mean, maybe I am going to be the first one.
I do not want you with me in a survival situation.
No, I swear to God.
You're the first to die.
No. I'm just saying in a realistic...
Joe, do not give him the gun. Don't pick up a gun without the intention of using it.
I am saying that as a teenager.
You know what, Mark?
He didn't even fire a shot. So how do you know that he doesn't even know how to fucking load or even like put, you know, the safety off? Just because one guy doesn't know.
Then tell you what, Mark, when you and I get abducted and we're trapped in the basement of the church and we walk upon an arsenal of weapons.
Well, I'm not going to fucking leave you.
No, you just hand that weapon over to me and then we'll leave.
Fine.
Yeah.
We'll live.
You motherfucker.
Don't pick up the gun if you're not going to use it.
Look, don't put my fucking, you know, reality. It's like, I'm thinking like actual reality. It's like, he's a teenager. Like, you don't know if he knows how to shoot the fucking gun. He's just using it as protection. Well, it's like, maybe I know how to do it. But he's going. But so, yeah, he's going to fucking run. It was absolutely realistic.
Then they have to give you that information in a movie. You can't assume he doesn't know how to use a gun if he has one in his hand. We can't assume that he doesn't know what a safety is unless he tries it
and it goes click.
We're gonna have to write in crayon exactly what each character has to do. Give me a break. No, it was absolutely phenomenal.
No, we need to see it.
Why?
You're making an assumption that the guy didn't know how to use a gun based on no evidence.
I'm making an assumption that he does know
and he just didn't use it.
You guys are, no, stop. So you're going to make an assumption that the guy Just because he's from the South knows how he knows how to do an A24.
Anything?
No, 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 and not at no, not even close, not even close. Holy shit! I got heated on that one. All right,
Mark, if you were in that situation and you picked up the gun, would you try firing it?
Well, I would have tried to fucking pull it, you know, if they were like right on me. But I don't know how to do a safety thing. I don't. I don't know how to take off the safety. Okay.
Next time I come out to the cabin, we'll have a little lesson.
Done.
Okay, we're gonna move down to Mark's passage a little bit more.
Please, let's move.
2018's Gareth Evans, 2018's The Apostle. This is set in 1905. A drifter on a dangerous mission to rescue his kidnapped sister tangles with a sinister religious cult on an isolated island. Mark, I know you were emotionally moved again by this film. So why don't you go ahead and tell us what you think?
I'm going to go make a 4-course meal while Mark is talking.
Just send us a text when you're done.
I'm not going to go long. I'm not going to go long on this, assholes. All right, so.
You send me an email when you're done.
look, I watched this film, and there were two scenes in this film that I couldn't even put my feet up, you know, that blocked the screen. I had to actually
This film should not be a part of any of your reviews, Mark. If you're talking about it, we're assuming you watched this film.
Fuck off, man. Okay, so I need some Jesus in my life after this film. Where to start? It's a great film. I only know the doctor, or not the doctor, the actor Dan. He was the lead, and the only time I've ever recognized him before Dan Stevens. He's from Downton Abbey. Love that.
You watched
show.
That?
Oh yeah, fucking it's amazing.
So good.
But, you know, he decided, you know, like, hey, I want to be a little bit bigger. You know, the show's big, so I'm going to go act. And
The movie that he left Downton Abbey to make?
I don't know.
No, it couldn't have been because that was a few years after. Sorry. Go.
No, it's fine.
You're interrupting, Matt.
No, he's fine.
I know.
But he's a really good actor, and this is the only time I've ever seen him from Downton Abbey. I really enjoyed the way he was hunched over, the way he had a drawl when he talked. When he walked, kind of was like a hunchback. He just kind of like swayed back and forth. It was just awesome to see. Really, really good actor. I want to see him in more. And obviously, you know, he's been in more films, but I'm going to watch it. My problem with this film was I thought it was a little bit all over the place. Just a tiny bit. I thought they could have condensed this just a tad more. But otherwise, the two scenes in this film got my ass up off the couch. And I start pacing as the purification scene with the drill going into the young man's head. Holy shit. That was too much. I loved it, but that got me out. Calmed down. Yeah. I sat down, and then we got to another scene. And that's when he's got the hooks in his hands, and it was going up and with, you know, the hands are going into those, like, not blades.
Like the rack.
The rack.
And, it's like a meat grinder.
A meat grinder. And you think, he's going to get out of it. He didn't get out of it. And I jumped up. I was like, when his hand was going through there, and I was just like, holy fucking shit. I texted Joe. I was going, fuck you, Joe. Or I don't even know what I texted him, but I was just like, oh my God, Joe. And I love period pieces. I love great acting. And this has everything. I just wish it was just a little bit more condensed. It didn't need to be that long. I looked at the reviews, and I think it said like a 6.3, which is crazy to think. Crazy. It doesn't need to be 6.3. This should be close to like a 7.7 or something. It's a great film. It really is. The Supernatural.
You said, "Oh my God, Joe!" By the way,
I did.
Yeah.
There's. Oh, you made me lose point.
The Supernaturals.
Yeah. Supernaturals. The Supernatural stuff was a little bit like hard to understand. I was getting, you know, like feed the blood to the tree woman, whatnot. I think it, you know, they could have condensed it or used some scenes to explain a little bit more of the supernatural. But otherwise, I thought it was beautifully shot. The cinematography was beautiful, and I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. Oh, and Matt, man, and man can an assassin take some spears. Holy shit, that was a great scene.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah,
that was cool. Yeah, I really liked this one. This was one that I had seen several times on there, and I just didn't get around to watching it because it just seemed like it was going to be a bit of a I don't know, dreary, you know, bleak, you know,
yeah.
And it is bleak, but it's not as, you know, it's not like I don't think it's like nihilistic or anything like that, but it was a really strong movie. I agree with you, Mark, that Dan Stevens is great in it, and if you like, you want to see more excellent Dan Stevens performances, I highly, highly recommend you watch the TV show Legion, where he plays the X-Men villain Legion.
That's
he
him.
Is so incredible in that. Did you watch it?
Yeah, of course I watched it. I had no idea that was Dan Stevens. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in it.
Yeah. I thought this was a really good one. I agree that the whole scene, the cleansing scene, whoo, that was tough to watch. That was really hard to watch. I think it was the only scene that I really found hard to watch. Although when he was being dragged into the grinder thing, that, you know, that was a tough scene, but I liked the main, oh gosh, who's the main priest? Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen.
Yeah, he's so good. He's just great. And Lucy Boynton, who you would remember, was also in a movie we watched, The Black Coat's Daughter. She played
so pretty as a redhead.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. And then the crazy dad who is nuts. He was evil. It was a good movie. I really liked it. I agree. This thing is over 2 hours long. It didn't need to be that long. I think they could have cut about 20 minutes off of this thing. Maybe even, I don't know about 30, but they probably could have cut at least 20 minutes off of this. And I think it would have been a much tighter movie. And, but it's brutal, you know. It's a tough movie, and I can see it's definitely not. It doesn't seem like a Netflix movie to me for some reason.
No.
It's so bleak and so brutal. But I loved it. I really liked this one. This was one of my of the new ones that I watched for the first time, which almost all these except for two were first time viewings for me. This was one of my favorites of the batch, so I really enjoyed it. I agree though that it could have used some tightening.
Yeah, I
agree. And the first place I would have done some tightening was right at the beginning where he's like boarding the boat.
Yeah.
I didn't really even understand that scene where he's trying to switch papers with some guy. I mean, really, just get on the boat, just go to the island. We didn't need it to be that detailed. Speaking of your X-Men comment, I don't know if you guys realize this or not, but the kid that plays Jeremy, the actor's name is Bill Milliner. He was the one that got the girl pregnant.
Yeah.
He was in X-Men First Class. He played the young Magneto in the Nazi concentration camps with Kevin Bacon. Remember that kid?
Yeah.
He like had to like try to move a coin across the desk or something. Anyway, I thought he was decent in this. There's one little tiny mistake that they made in this film that irked me, which was they used plastic shotgun shells, which weren't invented until 1960. Back then, they would have been paper. Anyway, the scene in the sewers where Dan Stevens is trying to escape.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this woman popped up out of the sewer, and I didn't understand. I mean, it was a great jump scare. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't know who she was or why she was down there.
Right. Yeah.
And for as much as I would like this movie timeline to be reduced, I would agree that we need more of an explanation of this woman entity who they're feeding blood to have the land thrive. I like that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting take, especially back in 1905. I just didn't understand. They needed to kind of give us the rules a little bit earlier on, but I understand why it kind of got overlooked because they're trying to hide that element in the storyline to the end as much as they possibly can and show it too early. And then it becomes more sci-fi than anything.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking what would have been, you know, if this is all in our CineScare universe, if this village was the village that kicked out the family from the movie The Witch. If they were all like in the same universe, I thought that would have been a neat little tie-in. So
Jesus,
that just shows I watched too many horror films. Okay, we're gonna wrap this up with the last one, House of the Devil by Ty West from 2009. This is in 1983. A financially struggling college student, Samantha Hughes, takes a strange babysitting job that coincides with a full lunar eclipse. She slowly realizes her clients are harboring a terrifying secret, putting her life in mortal danger. And before we get into anything else, I do want to point out that this has Greta Gerwig in it.
Yep.
Who made Barbie, which I didn't realize that. So
yep.
Anyway, Matt, what'd you think about The House of the Devil?
I thought it was, I mean, I love this movie. I've seen it a few times and I love this movie. I love the look of it. I love the feel of it. It's like a more horror version of the look of, the Love Witch, you know, with the, you know, the very 70s, 80s, well, it's 80s, early 80s, you know, atmosphere and look and feel, and it's very, very authentic. It felt to me, the opening credits. I love the opening credits. Love the music of the opening credits. It almost sounds like moving in stereo, the opening credit song. And I was looking for the song to see if there is a version out there of this, and there's not. It was just written for the movie, I believe, from what I can see. I even tried to Shazam it. I rewound it to Shazam it, and Shazam doesn't discover it. So, but it sounds very much like moving in stereo.
Yeah.
The atmosphere, again, I just love this atmosphere. This is a movie that is built on atmosphere. There's not a lot that goes on in it. There's a lot of moments of the girl just walking around the house and just creepy shots and zoom-ins and pull-outs and a lot of tracking shots and that sort of thing. And it's very much just the atmosphere, the look and feel, the graininess of the film. Made to look like, you know, we're watching something that is literally from like 1981. Tom Noonan is so, he's just creepy all the time, but he's great in this. He's so tall. Yeah. Yeah. He's so tall.
It's his voice. Right,
he's got this creepy quality without trying to be creepy. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like when you play, I had my acting coach out here. I had to do a scene where I was playing somebody who was drunk, and I was overdoing it and I knew it and I was having a tough time. And one of the notes he gave me is that drunk people are always trying to act sober. So you got to go from there first. You've got to be drunk. And but drunk people don't act drunk. They try to act like they're sober, and that's where that's what gives them away. And so I was like, that's sort of the way he is he doesn't play creepy. He just he plays it very like a normal guy, but there's in his trying to be normal, that's where the creepiness comes in.
Yeah.
Because you can see him trying to be normal. Her dancing in the house, I loved it. It was very 80s kind of style of dancing.
Great song, man. Great song.
Yeah.
The Fix. One thing leads to another.
It good.
Yeah.
I was bopping to that song when I was watching it.
I love this. I love the atmosphere. I loved the guy who played, I don't know if he's their son or who he was. He was part of the cult that the one with the beard that killed Greta Gerwig's character.
It was the son.
Is it
the son?
Yeah.
That is AJ Bowen. Mm. And by the way, he was in The Sacrament. He was the lead reporter from Vice.
Oh, no shit.
Same actor.
Oh, yeah. I saw
both
that
Ty
he was
West
in that.
Films. Yeah.
I saw that he was on there because when I looked him up, I saw that was in The Sacrament, but I couldn't figure out what part he played. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Lena Dunham played the voice of the 911 operator. I think she and Ty West have known each other for a long time, so she winds up in little teeny cameos in his movies quite a bit. So, loved it.
Mark, what'd you think?
Not a good start to the film showing that whore Dee Wallace is in it.
I'm going to stop you right there. Second note that I've taken. Oh, great. It's that whore Dee Wallace. I kid you not.
Swear to God, man. That fucking whore Dee Wallace, man, from Cujo.
She gets around.
Dude, I tell you, she drives me crazy. Every time I see Dee Wallace after Cujo, I'm going, that whore. That fucking whore. And that's the only scene she's in is at the beginning. I was just like, okay, all right. I love the best friend, Megan. And that was a great jump scare with the cigarette lighting when she parks the car after she drops off her best friend. And the gentleman comes up and lights a cigarette. Scared me. And then the gunshot, you know. Great special effects, whatever happened to her face. I don't know. Was that special effects? Was that it was so good. I couldn't even tell.
Mark, that girl, that was Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
That wrote when Barbie.
When you were offline, Matt actually told me that, and I was just like, holy shit. Like, had no idea. But great actress. The pizza scene when she's just eating the pizza and just talking, great actress. And I had no idea she was the director of Lady Bird and Barbie. Holy talent right there. I enjoyed this film. Unfortunately, as great as this film looks and the lead actress being so charismatic, the ending doesn't pay off. Because nothing really happens until the last 10 minutes. And when the payoff happens, it's just a meh for me. Not saying that I don't appreciate, the tension of like what's going to happen, like the bomb underneath the seat, Hitchcock. I get that. And it was beautifully shot. I loved every scene. But the payoff wasn't, I think, well executed. I think it just happened way too fast. It had the pulsing lights and she's like tied up. And it just all happened too fast. Everything was great until the very end. It was just too compressed into a ball where you're just like, what's happening? And it all happens like in 10, 13 minutes. And so I don't think the payoff was, it just wasn't good enough for me for the buildup. I think it just kind of like a balloon just letting out gas, like, it was just, nah. So, everything said, everything about this movie was great. It was just the last 10, 13 minutes to pay off. It just didn't pay off. It just didn't pay off for me.
Okay. I most of what I have for notes has already been said. Shot on 16 millimeter film to give it that 80s grainy look, which I appreciated right off the bat. So I'm so glad I watched The Love Witch before seeing this. So I mean, not that I was expecting it, but I settled into the 1980s lore a little bit easier and sooner than I normally would have. It's very nostalgic. I think they did a great job painting the era all the way down to the Sony Walkman with the orange headphones, which I just adore. The cast is great. I want to point out Mary Warrenov, who played Mrs. Ullman. I know I've seen her in other things. I looked her up on IMDb, and I can't remember what I've seen her in. But I thought she's just phenomenal. I love her in that role. She makes the perfect husband for Tom Noonan. And I love the music. Like I said, so, the fix, one thing leads to another. And there was nice suspenseful music throughout most of this movie. I loved it. I'm very glad this got that I picked this one. Yeah. This is definitely one of my favorites. We should have done, like, if we hadn't covered most of these already, but just movies that are meant to be shot in a different era and fool you entirely. So like this and Love Witch. And,
right.
Yeah.
What's the other one? Where the teenagers have to have sex with somebody else to pass it on.
It Follows.
It follows. Yeah. That one would have been another great one to put all together. Mm-hmm. There has to be more. Joe, so anyway, that's it. That's the, yes.
Good. Joe, did you like the ending, or was it too fast for you, or was it just like perfect for you?
No, it wasn't. I don't want to say it was perfect for me. I think she had a heroic ending, but I agree. It's kind of like with The Apostle, where they didn't want to dive into the details of the cult too soon, or what, you know, what they were trying to hide their cards, and they just hid them a little too long.
Yeah.
And it does, there's an awful lot of explanation that you want to have, but it's so condensed at the end. You kind of have to, you know, suspension of disbelief to say, oh, well, I guess that's her escaping from a religious cult. So,
Yeah, I mean, what are they going to do? Stop and have a Scooby-Doo moment where that somebody explains everything, you know?
And you can't allude to it earlier in the film, or else it's going to take away the reveal at the end.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I'm not looking for a Scooby-Doo, like, you know, ending or whatnot, but I think that they could have condensed a little bit of just sitting on the couch, you know, watching TV and just walking around, looking out the window. They could have condensed it a little bit and like gone into.
Then you would have taken out the dance number, and that was great.
No. Mm-hmm. Keep the dance number in. That was the, in my opinion, one of the best scenes in the whole entire fucking movie. It was. I thought I was watching like a 80s music video. It was fantastic. Oh man, Kim Cattrall.
Kim Cattrall. Yeah.
You just lulled me back.
No, it actually,
you just
what was that?
Me back.
What was the other one that we watched a couple episodes ago? Like Body Double?
Yeah.
Where they were shooting the porn.
Yeah.
It was
the dance. Yeah.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Yeah,
yeah. Relax.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah. We need more of that in films.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we
totally.
Do.
Totally. A little dance break, but they have to dance 80s style, you know, that 80s, whatever that, it's almost like they're running
like in Breakfast
place
Club.
Or kicking in place
and the 80s dancing. She was nailing the 80s dancing. Just going up the stairs. Yeah, yeah. I mean, she was to the beat. It was beautiful. I mean, I was bopping to that scene. I was just like, hell yeah. And then I was waiting for something to happen and nothing happened. And then everything happened at the last 10, 13 minutes of.
I will say they, I mean, it's, if you didn't do the research, I don't know that you would realize that was shot in 2009. No, they did no. such an excellent job with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps things up. Those are a nice five movies, Joe.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, Joey.
Round of applause.
Yeah. So next time is Jimmy's, if he actually
shows
up.
Who the fuck is Jimmy?
No. So his five movies, which the three of us might be reviewing again, just ourselves, are as follows. And his theme is small screen spooks, TV terrors. So these are all horror movies that were made for television. The first one is Curse of the Black Widow from 1977. And this one can be found on Amazon Prime. Next is When a Stranger Calls Back from 1993. This is free on Tubi. It's on Amazon Prime and it's on Freevee.
Is that a sequel? Do I need to watch When a Stranger Calls first to figure out what's going on?
Don't know. I've not seen this one. I've only seen the first one, so I have no idea.
We're going to watch whatever Jimmy tells us to. If there's a, if it's a sequel,
When a Stranger Calls Back. Yeah. It is a sequel, but I don't think you have to have seen the first one.
I don't know that I've seen. Maybe I have seen the first
one. I haven't.
Well, it's a, I don't know. Yeah, it's great. I talked about it on here, but that was before we all were watching the same movie.
Yeah, I probably wasn't listening.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Joe.
The third movie is Death Watch. And I think this is the movie that Jimmy wanted to make this theme for, was because of this movie. So this is Death Watch from 1980. It is free on Tubi.
These are all films that were released on TV.
They're all TV horror movies. Yep.
TV horror films. Okay.
The next one, number four, is The Initiation of Sarah from 1978, and that is on Pluto and Tubi. A lot of Tubi on this one. And then last is Summer of Fear, also known as, that you might see it under the title Stranger in My House, and that is from 1978, and it's on Tubi, Plex, and a whole bunch of others.
And James didn't pick Sylvia from Little House on the Prairie. That son of a bitch.
Well, these are TV movies, not episodes.
Oh, movies, and episodes. Okay.
Yeah. So I actually, in the future, may be doing a horror episode of a TV show. TV shows.
Like Happy Days.
Yeah, had a horror episode.
Jump in the Shark.
No, not Happy Days.
Jump in the Shark.
Jump in the Shark. So that might make it onto that. But
different strokes with the
molester. I wonder if there's It's a Living Halloween special.
What'd you say, Joe?
So I wonder if there's a episode of It's a Living that had a Halloween special.
That's a great show.
That gem that I found with the women that
they're up in a penthouse. Oh. They're all waitresses.
It's such a good show. I watched six episodes so far.
And they're nothing but hotties. And the redhead is the hottest. Not
Joe. I have
not
a question
the
for you though.
Blonde.
Yeah,
Joe. Why isn't Moonlighting available to stream anywhere?
I actually have a very good answer for that. It's because of the music rights.
Really?
There's a lot.
Yes, they've gone into, there's a lot of R&B classics from the 60s and 70s in there that always played underneath most of the show. And they are still having trouble getting the rights to all that stuff. So it's not going to air.
That's so weird because you'd think they had the rights. How would they have lost?
Well, they had the rights to air it on network television, and that's it. But they don't, have the rights to air it in reruns on streaming services.
What's that one TV show?
Which is kind of what the whole Vietnam is going
the
on
Vietnam medical thing, not MASH. Shit. It's a Vietnam thing where chick's the leader. It's an 80s fucking Vietnam thing where it's medical and they had this
is going to be our first.
Fascinated to hear
this.
This
has got
to
be. This has got to be our first cliffhanger episode where we end with nobody knowing what the answer to this is.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Tune in next time and maybe we'll find out.
Yeah, but in 2 weeks, Mark will remember the name of the TV show.
It's a medical fucking Vietnam show. It was in the 80s and it had chicks and it was...
Well, if you're listening still and you know the answer to this question, hit us up on our Facebook page
supposed to be.
And tell Mark what the answer is.
China...
China Beach.
What China Beach! Saying? That's it. China Beach. You don't see that on streaming.
Matt,
you don't see that on
Matt
streaming.
Knew the answer the whole time.
He did.
Oh, my God.
He did. It was China Beach. That's what it was.
He held up the show all this time for fucking China Beach.
Yeah. Well, God, they're not doing, you know, you can't see that on streaming because of all the songs.
For good reason, yeah.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Oh, come on.
Oh yeah. My name is Superfan Mark. This is Sinner Scare. We're going out like a deer running through the forest.
Like a deer
getting hit by trees.
Running through the forest.
Getting hit by trees. Or cars
getting hit by trees.
That's not a rapper.
Or cars. I ain't a rapper.
Fuck off.
Is there an echo?
Well,
why do we do this show?
I know.
Why did you invite me on this show?
Because it's fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. So go to www.sinnerscarehorror.com and check out our merchandise, please. Joe worked hard to design these shirts. Why don't you go buy one?
Yeah, you should do it out of pity. Yeah
out of pity. And then... In less than 2 months now, Mark and I will be at H45, I guess, Halloween 45 in Pasadena, the Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween convention for celebrating the movie. I suddenly can't talk anymore. And we will be there at a booth, and we might have Vincent DeSanti with us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. Maybe.
What about James?
If he listens to this show.
And maybe James.
Maybe James. Who the
Vincent's
fuck knows?
Cut us off. And we also have a little project that we'll be doing. We'll be talking about probably in a couple weeks a little bit more as we solidify it. So stay tuned for that. So, all right. Well, I guess we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Fuck off, Matt.